Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And look for continued innovation at huntrealestate.com. We're in the process, actually, of beginning a redo entirely, but in the meantime, it's still the most comprehensive resource you have for real estate and homeownership services. And that is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, and all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and most recently in Boston, Massachusetts. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to help you find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's guaranteed. Also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk at all, to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash because you have a mortgage commitment. And a mortgage commitment is vastly different than a pre-approval, which is what the industry, you know, throws around. But a pre-approval is really hardly worth the paper it's written on. A mortgage commitment tells the seller of the home that you are committed. Someone, a bank, is committed to loaning you the money. Vastly different than someone says you're approved for X number of dollars. So call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700 for personalized, customized, what we like to call knock-your-socks-off service, and check out that low-rate guarantee. And don't forget about the first-ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline. That's the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property. That's absolutely any property listed for sale in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, Utica, Watertown, and even Phoenix, Arizona. All you have to do is dial 716-631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about. Just the street number, no matter whose listing it is. And the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property all automatically. And just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. So if you drive by a sign that's got all kinds of stuff on it and you can't take the time to stop and check it all out, just dial 631-4800, put the street number. All you have to know is know what number the house is. You don't have to worry about all that stuff on the sign. And all the information will be in your hands in seconds. It's much faster than going to the web, much faster. We are also the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and Rochester Americans. And we also support the Buffalo Bisons. So go Bills. Tomorrow's a big day. We are broadcast live on WBEN 9:30 a.m. And for those of you who'd like to participate in today's show, if you have questions or comments about any aspect of real estate or what my guest is going to be sharing with us, call us from the studio at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 or star 930. Those are all free calls, so join us on the air at Our House. And we have a very special show for you today. One of my favorite shows is to have this particular guest on. That's Dottie Gallagher Cohen, the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership. Good morning, Dottie.
Good morning, Peter. It's nice to be here.
Good to have you back. It's been a little while since you've been on, but you're one of my stalwarts here that provides us with all kinds of insights into what's going on here in Western New York and what you see happening in the future, which is critically important. And I know you have not just your finger on the pulse of our community from a business standpoint, also from a political standpoint, but also you have kind of unfettered access to the people that are making, I guess, the bulk of the decisions here in our community for various areas. What do you see? One of the things that we've been spending a lot of time on this show with our elected officials and our community leaders is this concept of momentum that we all feel here in our community. And you certainly probably are more of a student of what's behind this momentum than anybody else in the community. Is it real, or is it just something we're feeling?
No, I think it's absolutely real. I think when you look at where the region is compared to where we were in particular, and even, you know, all you have to do is look around. You don't have to read economic reports. Things look different. They feel different. They are different, and particularly compared to ourselves. And I think the danger of that is that, you know, it's sort of an audience of one, right? We're essentially looking in a mirror. So if, you know, if I lost 100 pounds, you'd say, gosh, Dottie, you look great, but I still wouldn't look like, you know, Christy Brinkley. You know what I'm saying?
Wait a minute. Come on. Don't sell yourself short there.
I'm just saying there's a little bit of a false sense of security isn't the right word. But I think, you know, we're in this great place for the first time, certainly in my lifetime, where we actually can compete with other regions. And so what does that mean? That means, you know, the average wage here is approaching the national average. It means, you know, our home prices are approaching the national average. We look a lot like other communities. So, you know, I often say, you know, the good news is we can compete. The bad news is we have to compete. So we used to rely on, you know, the fact that we paid low wages here and that, you know, real estate was a song and all of that as our competitive advantage. And now we really have to compete on a different level. So that creates other challenges. If you look at our economic performance, and I think the best, for me anyway, and, you know, this is my own opinion, one of the best indicators is to really look at private sector job creation. We still rank in the bottom of the top 100 counties in terms of the number of private sector jobs that we are creating in this community. Now,
we'll go into a little detail on that.
Well, because, you know, jobs that are created by government or jobs that are created, publicly funded, don't really contribute to the overall economic vitality. They take from, you know, it's taxpayers that are paying for the bill for that. So when you want to look at where are people making investments, and where are those jobs being created? There's a really interesting list of the top 100 counties, and depending on when you look and over what time period, we're in the 90s. You know, we're in the 90s there, so that's a cautionary tale. Now, let me tell you the good side of that is Buffalo's really near full employment right now. So if we created, you know, a lot more jobs, mm-hmm. we wouldn't be able to find the people to put in them. So that gives you a picture of kind of where we have to go as a community. But the cautionary tale I say is, you know, let's not believe our own press releases. Things are way, way better than they were, but now's not the time to put up gates. Now's the time to put our foot on the gas and really accelerate the community as best we can.
Regarding jobs, you've been deeply involved, your organization as well as the United Way in a jobs training, jobs creation, I think implicit in that. Task force and really community-wide effort. How's that going?
It's going well. And I will say, you know, when we started this conceptually by asking our board, you know, our board is made up of, you know, the most powerful CEOs in all of the community. And we asked them, what do you expect the regional chamber to be doing in the workforce space? And the answer after about an 18-month study was make the system work better for employers and for people. And what we've learned over this past four-year period is if you are a person who needs to access training or supports, let's say childcare subsidies or food stamps or whatever it is you need in order to survive, it takes a tremendous amount of tenacity to actually have the workforce system help you. It's up to you. And it shouldn't be that hard. And from an employer point of view, the same is true. And by the way, that's not a Buffalo problem. That's a U.S. problem. It's just the way the structure of the workforce system is set up. The good news is that all of the partners in this coalition we put together, and it's a coalition of the willing, you know, it's education and training providers. It's employer led, which is a big difference. It's workforce providers really getting in a room and saying, okay, how do we make this work better? So what does that mean? Well, right now we have an experiment, a prototype, we call it a pilot program, where we've gotten three local employers that have a high number of low-wage workers. That is the structure of their business. One's retail, one's tourism and hospitality, and the other is warehousing. And those three employers have agreed to work with us to actually help identify who in those companies has the ability to move up. And if they don't have the ability to move up within that company, how can we bring training and supports to work to help those people move up and out of those businesses? And this innovation, you might say, well, why would an employer want to help someone, you know, get trained and get out of their company? And the answer is, if they have the stability to be in a place, if they know they're going to, if they have to, because of their lack of skill set, have to earn a low wage, that employer, if that employer can retain them for 2 years, that retention helps their business. So some of these businesses, they turn people 3 months, 6 months, you know, to get to a year's long time. So the structure of this experiment is if someone stays with a company for a year, that they will get training in a job, a demand job, and they will get that training while they are at work and while they are getting paid. Because these folks we're talking about, the working poor, cannot afford to quit their jobs and go to ECC or go somewhere else full time. They have a lot of demands on their life, and their lives are very complicated. So the working poor is really the focus for our community. That's really where we see a lot of inequity and where we see people who, you know, whose talents we want to be able to tap into. So Buffalo is still not an inbound destination. People don't say, oh, I can't wait to move to Buffalo. And that just doesn't happen here yet. But we have to really sort of grow our own.
That's a very interesting point because, you know, at our company, we have, particularly in our title agency and our mortgage company, we have a real need for entry-level people that we can train to move up through the organization. And it's incredible the competition for these people.
Yes.
First of all, it's hard to find them. And then it's hard to keep them because if they start to show a spark and really start moving up, our competitors know about this.
Sure.
And they latch right on. And in many
cases. Peter, that's so interesting what you just said because this model that we're using, this test model that we're using, is based on the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Talent Pipeline Management Strategy, which is a supply chain right job, right person, right time strategy. But it starts with employers who are competitors who understand we share the workforce. Mm-hmm. And stealing your guy is not a sustainable way to run my business. So employers are
because
getting...
there's only really fundamentally one way to do that, and that's pay more.
Well, yeah.
And so that just affects the...
And the pay more thing is, you know, maybe good for consumers, but in the end, that still doesn't get... You're spending money on a recruitment...
And retention, too.
And instead of spending money on retention and building career tracks, because people are moving for an extra dollar, and I don't blame them. I would do the same thing. But when employers can get around a table and say, okay, we need to create a pipeline that works for all of us, that pipeline in, that's where in other markets there have been, in Houston, for example, in the oil and gas market, employers have gathered together to really do this and to develop a key training programs that may not require a full 2-year degree, but just enough training to be able to get to work and be productive sooner. And that's the kind of thing that we're really experimenting with here. And we're experimenting here in an environment where, as you say, labor is very constrained. And I hate to say it, but it's going to get worse. You know, over the next 5 years or so, 20% of our adult age workforce will retire. So this is going to be a critical issue for our community moving forward. It is the critical issue, quite honestly.
You know, it's interesting. I always do my unscientific study when I go out someplace, just look around at the percentage of gray hairs versus younger people in restaurants and stores and that kind of thing. And I was very pleasantly surprised when I went out for brunch with my kids last weekend, and I looked around the restaurant, and everybody was young. I was like the oldest guy there.
That's because you're getting old, Peter.
Well, I know. relatively speaking, they were young, very young, but it was very pleasantly surprising because it was like the first time I'd noticed that I was way in the minority, and I don't know if that's indicative of anything, but.
Well, you know, the facts, that's one of the, when you say is the change in Buffalo real, that's one of the real bellwethers. For the first time probably ever, we have above the national average a percentage of people between the ages of 20 and 34 living here. So for decades, we had this out-migration. People would, you know, they'd graduate from high school, they'd go away to college, and they'd be like, I'm not going back to Buffalo. That has really changed. It sort of started during the recession when younger people didn't have the option to leave. And our recovery in the recession was a little faster. You know, we didn't drop as low, and we got out a little bit sooner. But the trick is, are those folks staying here? And this is really one of the things that the partnership is really focused on, is how do we create an environment where young people really want to live and keep their roots, that they can flourish here. And so this year we're actually in our second year of doing a young professional study to really measure that. And help employers understand the kind of environments they need to create in order to keep this kind of talent in our region.
One of the things that we look at every day, really, is the availability of housing for all the people you're talking about. And one of the strange phenomena that's evolved over the last couple of years with the shortage of inventory is a level of frustration, particularly among young people, that say, you know, look, I'm just going to wait because I can't find anything. And by the way, the thing I thought would be 200,000 is 350,000. Right. And that's just out of my league right now. So two things are happening. One is they're pushing out farther into areas that were pretty much not terribly explored by younger, up-and-coming people. They were just off-limits, so to speak, or left to somebody else. So there's people pushing out into those neighborhoods, which is extremely healthy, except for the people that are living there now because they feel the gentrification pushing them out, and where do they go? And so there's an impact, for example, on our refugee and immigrant population negatively. There's also a negative impact on people that have been living there for generations.
Right.
For example, behind the medical corridor on the east side where people are feeling this kind of push. And values doubling, not, you know, that doesn't mean they're going to 500,000, but they're going from 50 to 100,000 or 120,000 where they were. And all of a sudden somebody has to make a decision. Do I keep my house, stay here where I've lived maybe for more than one generation, my family? Or do I sell, take my one-time gain, and try to find someplace else? And that's not so easy. So we're kind of in a very interesting time in the housing market. I don't know if any of the work that you're doing at the, at the partnership looks at that. But
we do, actually, and we're very close to it because I think there's a little bit of fake news around this as it relates to affordable housing. I think, you know, you've identified the one area in the community where we really have issues around the medical campus, and I think the West Side also.
Very much so.
But the West Side has been stabilized. You know, those neighborhoods were not as secure as they are today due to that increase. But I'll tell you an interesting.
Look at South Buffalo, Lackawanna.
Well, see, in South Buffalo, to me, you know, South Buffalo, if I was a young person looking to invest in a house, you know, I would go to South Buffalo. You know, a lot of those people, first of all, the houses have great bones, and the people live there for generations, and, you know, they're aging out of those homes, and that's really going to be the revitalization. I'm actually, my family's from South Buffalo. We used to walk Seneca Street all the time when I was a kid. And today, you know, I don't think, you know, it's not nearly the kind of robust community it was, you know, 30 years ago.
From a family oriented standpoint.
Right. And I think that's what young people will bring back to that community. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to people on the West Side as an example, the immigrant and refugee population really stabilized a lot of those neighborhoods. But this idea that people are getting priced out and they're moving and, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And gentrification. I mean, the fact of the matter is we're still losing people here.
Right.
Okay. So when you talk about, and this makes me a little crazy, because when you talk about gentrification and, you know, these attempts at inclusionary zoning, forcing affordable housing units and market rate developments, et cetera, we don't have the market conditions that support that. We still have one of the highest vacancy rates in the country in terms of real estate, and our real estate is still far below the national average. So here in this region, for example, rents are about 85% of the national average. So we have to be careful. A quick story, we did a downtown housing study because most of the adaptive reuse projects have happened in downtown. And the zip code of 14203, which is where the vast majority of old abandoned buildings that got incentives to get redone are located, we went back and looked. And we have actually helped increase the population of downtown by 10%. If you look at the neighborhood of 14203, we have increased representation of every racial and ethnic class. And the fastest growing population in that zip code is middle class people. Mm-hmm. And yet the number of people who earn less than $25,000 in that zip code has not gone down. In other words, we've actually brought new life into that region and not displaced. I mean, I'm not saying someone didn't get displaced and I'm sure this has happened anecdotally. What I'm saying is it is not a trend.
Well, if you take an older building and that's, you know, partially in use, but maybe not in use at all, and you bring it back to life through this adaptive, you're not going to displace anybody.
Correct. And I've heard stories, and, you know, we have a very robust sort of discussion with the activist community here, because what I'm concerned about is that we overreact to some things and we wind up stopping development. If we make it so onerous to do development here, you know, capital will move elsewhere where it's easier to do the work, and we will then stagnate in terms of our ability to attract people to live here. And when you talk about young people, you know, they want vibrant urban areas. They don't want to live out in the far suburbs. They just don't. And so that's where our golden opportunity is for our future. And I just don't want to, you know, overreact to what's actually very, very positive. We have one of the most successful adaptive reuse programs in the country, and there's a lot of chatter around putting more gates up, making that money harder to access, and I just think it would be a crying shame for that to happen.
Well, I want you to get specific on that, because you're really talking about a political divide and looking at a reality from two different, totally different perspectives and that don't right. line up at all. You mentioned, for example, about the inclusionary zoning, the issue of effectively forcing developers to have so many affordable units within the confines of a redevelopment project, which, what's affordable in this community? And this is one of the things that we've discussed, for example, the School of Architecture planning. Mm-hmm. You know, what is affordable housing, and how do we address this issue? And the school is very involved in that. But you have to start with the definition. How do you define?
Well, I mean, I think they talk about, you know, the percentage of the median income that you need in order for, you know, as a percentage of your rent or mortgage. And so affordable is different. If you're in a place that's more affluent and people are earning more money, the definition of affordable will be a little bit different. But just to put a fine point on this, the number of units that have been permitted for development in the city of Buffalo in 2018, 51% were affordable housing units. Not yeah. public housing. That's different.
Right.
But affordable housing. Now, having said that,
affordable just in terms of that price range?
What percentage of their income has to go to rent? You know, the people
was
who
that
there.
By design or was that forced?
Voluntarily developers are building units in that because that's what they need in that part of the market.
Mm-hmm. Then why is there this push then to force something on top of something that seems to be working?
Well, let me just say, Peter, this is a bigger conversation, and I think the issue is it's a good soundbite to say we're going to force these fat cat developers to, you know, put affordable housing units in market rate developments and they're going to pay for it. That's just not the way things work. And that's not the way they work anywhere in the country, including San Francisco, which has genuine...
And capital just moves.
Right, right. People pick it up and move it. Exactly right.
Go someplace else because it is rather portable. We do have to go to break, Dottie. We'll be back with more from Our House to Yours with Dottie Gallagher-Cohn after these important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you've found the best rate available for your home loan, why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate. And through our links to our other websites, Phoenix, Arizona, and even Boston, Massachusetts. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA all through upstate and, again, way out to Phoenix, Arizona, and to Boston, Massachusetts. And this show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And for more information about our exclusive mortgage program, it allows you effectively to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before but live the after. Call 633-3700 and ask for details. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment that I mentioned earlier in the show. This is your best way to compete in today's very, very tight inventory market, and that is by having a powerful offer supported by a mortgage commitment, not just a pre-approval. Some people are fortunate enough to have cash. Many people are not. This pre-purchase commitment allows you to compete with people who put cash on that offer. So check it out today, 633-3700. And for those of you who would simply prefer to pick up the phone and ask a specific or general question about anything relative to real estate, call the only customer service center for real estate in North America, the Hunt Customer Service Center, at 633-9400. And one of our customer service reps will either answer your question right there or direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan. There's no stronger guarantee in the real estate world, and it's available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. Stop into one of our many open houses this weekend and ask about the seller security plan. I'm in the studio today with Dottie Gallagher-Cohen, the president and CEO of the Buffalo-Niagara Partnership. And we've been talking about, first of all, the kind of the issue of momentum in our community and the underlying elements of that and what will sustain that momentum. And the first thing we discussed, and I kind of cut you off in the middle of it, was the whole workforce development issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned in that, in your discussion, the number of people that would be retiring. And I've heard the number of 160-some-odd thousand within some period of time. Do you know what I'm talking about?
You know, actually, the number that I know, and I don't know what the granular number is, but some years ago, let's say 2 or 3 years ago, it was 25% over the next 10 years. And so, you know, what you got to remember here in the region, we from decades, younger people moved out and you know, we've all hung around and now we're getting old. So eventually as folks retire, that's what's going to happen. And the pipeline behind it is not as robust as mm-hmm. it may be in some other places. So it's going to be challenging. But again, not just here, I think everywhere.
And I think that's one of the elements of, I think, our whole nationwide
exactly
picture in terms of how we are re-engineering our whole economic base. And one of the things that we've been talking about with many people on the show is this issue, and you used the word just once or twice maybe in your conversation earlier, this whole issue of advanced manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that real? I mean, are we really moving in that direction here in Western New York? And can you give us a couple examples of how this is going to be at least part of the answer to this whole workforce issue?
Well, I think the vast number of jobs that are going to be open in advanced manufacturing are going to be because of these retirements. But there is growth forecasted in that segment as well. And I don't recall
can
off the
top
of my head.
Can you define it first?
You know, what advanced manufacturing
yep.
is really any manufacturing process, right? So, but it's not just like Bethlehem Steel, right? So, for example, where there's a local company called Sopar Corporation, they assemble electronic circuit boards and they do it for you know, all kinds of controls. And it's people sitting at a bench and they're assembling these controls. You've got folks that are doing printing technology. TapeCon comes, they do tapes and rolls of printing technology for labeling and that sort of thing. Printers would some printers, high level printing would be considered advanced manufacturing. So it's really anything that requires, you know, a bit of a brain power, some technical knowledge, and what's interesting about a lot of these jobs. In fact, there were some jobs at a local company, International Paper, paid nearly $19 an hour with no degree required. And they have trouble even finding people for those jobs. And this is a different issue, which we'll introduce. But one of the challenges that in advanced manufacturing that employers have, despite the high pay, is people have to pass a drug test by and large. And that's really where some things fall down for people who lack education. So it's what I would say to any parent who's listening, you ought to really look into what advanced manufacturing looks like and feels like. And over the course of in the month of October, we're going to be doing 4 tours at local manufacturing sites to get potential students and parents to see it. There's a real stigma attached to manufacturing, again, not just in Buffalo, but throughout the country. And I think here in particular, we have a little bit of PTSD because of what happened with Bethlehem Steel. But those are real jobs. And by the way, they're not just jobs on the floor. It's accounting, it's sales, it's any function that's in any other business. But it is a significant part of our economy historically and moving forward. And we have a great workforce. And, you know, just to, again, at the risk of creating a political dynamic, if you look at some of our manufacturers, the refugees that have resettled here have gotten really good jobs in some of these places, and we have manufacturers lined up to take more people who have resettled here to do those jobs. Really good, working with their hands, who like the work, and who want the work. And if we did not have those resettled refugees in our community, in Buffalo in particular, we would really have seen a population decline in Erie County, and instead we have a net positive population. So when it comes to those jobs that require sets of hands and a good head on your shoulders, those jobs are there. I'll put a little plug in for my colleagues over at the Northland Training Center. The governor has made a very big bet. It's a $50 million bet on an integrated training center on the east side of Buffalo. Will they be training folks in 8 different skills within manufacturing? Some of the programs are 1-year programs. Some of the programs are 2-year programs. And the strategy that they've put together, and the gentleman who's running his name is Steve Tucker, is a very, very bright man, is to really do it all in one place, including wrap services to help people get the supports they need to get through the training. And they're going to be opening in the next few weeks for their inaugural class. So there's a big community response here, and hopefully it will help us fill these jobs.
When I hear about another program like that,
yeah,
I can't help but think back to a few others that we embraced with great fanfare, and then all of a sudden nobody's talking about them, like Startup New York.
Yeah.
What happened with that? And I've had J.P. Bach on, who's one of the, I guess, success stories in that arena, sort of, I guess, by some estimations. You don't hear much about it.
Well, I think I'm not an expert in that program. I think it was all of these programs. And you're going to get me on a political soapbox now. But all of these programs are programs that would be unnecessary if we had the right tax and regulatory environment. These are programs to help us compete.
Mitigate that tax rate.
So stop putting together programs and let's just fix the structure. I know that's a lot easier said than done, and our governor did not create the problem originally, and I think his Startup New York was an attempt to innovate around that. I don't think it was successful. I think they would tell you that it wasn't successful, but at least, you know, they tried something. And I can't comment on what they should have done differently. I really don't know. But I commend them for at least trying to make us more competitive for business attraction.
This is interesting. We do have a couple tweets or instant messages that are coming in. Number one is, leaving retirees will be fleeing to find a place we can afford. This person apparently is leaving, and the retirees will be fleeing to find a place we can afford. Do you hear that, or is that just anecdotal? And just as an aside, if someone does leave this area and they sell their home, there is an opportunity for somebody else. So it's not without change, and without positive change, I should say, in some way, shape, or form. But we hate to see people leaving this community. Another one is, age increases to meet the current and future costs of living in Buffalo. I'm not sure what that means. We're not going to be able to afford to stay here instead of the young people. I'm not sure, again, what that really means. But
I think this goes back to what we know. Okay, so our tax, you know, we are one of the most highly taxed states in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally number 2. And so when you're retiring and you are living on a fixed income, you're going to be hyper aware of fixed expenses that you have. And, you know, Peter, you know people who have bought houses in Florida and changed their residency, and they changed their residency to avoid the tax environment here. Mm-hmm. And that's just not retirees. That's people with wealth. And I think anytime wealth leaves a community, whether it's a retired person or someone of greater means, it's harmful to the community, because that means they're not spending time here. They're not shopping in our stores. They're not eating in our restaurants.
Or
they're not supporting
money
their communities.
To the philanthropic organizations.
Exactly. So this is what I'm saying. I think, you know, we have got to try to improve our state government and really get this to be a more affordable place to do business. We are 49th out of 50 in business unfriendliness, and that is the tax foundation. That's all related to 6 different dimensions of how we are taxed and regulated here in New York.
Well, we've got 1 minute left before the break, so it's going to be hard for us to delve into that, but we will, because I think this is the issue. You can do everything in the world to work with the environment we have, but if the overall environment is not competitive, and you talked earlier in the show about things being competitive, more competitive than we're competing in, you mentioned a couple different scales, but if we're totally uncompetitive in kind of key elements of decision making, which is tell me about the tax environment, tell me about the regulatory environment, if we're not competing there, a lot of that other stuff is just,
right,
we're just treading water.
People vote with their wallets.
Exactly right. And when you say suggest that one person, one wealthy person, will make a decision to move to a zero or low tax state, it takes a lot of people to replace them in terms of, in terms of their impact. One of those people might take 500 people, other people, in terms of relatively good paying positions, relatively active in our community, to replace the power of one of those people.
Well, and just, you know, just as a closing statement on this, we are also paying for decades of urban sprawl. What does that mean? That means that we have twice the developed land that we had in 1950 with the same population. So as that population goes down, our costs go up.
And then a happy note,
we're going to go to we got to talk about something happy after the break.
We'll be right back after these important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. When it comes to the single biggest purchase of your life, it pays to shop around. If you think you've found the best rate available for your home loan, why not let us take a second look? We'll review your rates and your terms and try to see if we can do better. And just for giving us a shot, we'll give you a $50 gift card.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And check it out at 633-3700 and learn about the many exclusive mortgage programs that allow you to really take advantage of what still is a very, very cost-effective real estate financing world right now. And I know we talk about the rates going up 0.75% over a year or whatever the actual percentage increase is, and we get all nutsy about that. But if you go back any period of time, you're going to see that those are still, by any estimation, very close to historic lows. And those of you that can and want to take advantage of the market, this is still as good a time as I've ever seen in my life, with the exception being that the inventories are low. And so you'll have to compete. You'll have to get out there and look. And when something comes becomes available, you have to be ready, which is why we do the things we do at Hunt Mortgage, to make sure that you are ready. So start there at 633-3700, and then stop into one of our open houses. Talk to our agents. Ask them about, if you have a home, ask them about the seller security plan to make sure that all your bases are covered when you enter this very, very interesting real estate market. And we're here in the studio today with Dottie Gallagher-Cohen, the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership. And we're just started to get into kind of the thorny issue of what underlies really all of our prospects for the future, and that's the tax and regulatory environment that we all live in. So you were starting to talk about that, and I know there's been enormous amounts of work done in this area by the partnership, some of which I was involved with over 20 years ago now, and that was to, I guess, encourage our politicians and really our, the business people in this community too, to, as we called it at the time, get real. You know, what do we really need to do here? And then I'd like you to just mention the key things that you think really need to get done, and then give us realistic prospects and what would have to happen for those things to really hit the radar screen of the politicians in such a way they'd act.
Well, I think that the challenge, I wish it were only a handful of things, because then we could sort of focus our efforts, but the regulatory environment and the tax structure here is sort of death by a thousand cuts, right? It's everywhere you look. You know, some glaring things that we advocate around every year or something, one of them is scaffold law reform, which adds about 30% to, or 20, between 20 and 30% to the cost of a project, especially insurance that you have to buy here only in New York State, that drives up the cost of all development. We talk about prevailing wage, which sounds great, that you know, you're going to pay someone what the prevailing wage is, but oftentimes those numbers are grossly inflated by pension costs, that pensions that have gone belly up. So you're again increasing the cost of a project that requires prevailing wage by about 20%. So you know these, you know these are the, and workers' comp. We had the fourth highest workers' comp costs in the country. Now we did get some advocacy wins around that. We'll see how that all plays out. And that was really around getting the state to look at how you compensate people who are injured, and understand we want people to get proper compensation, but the medical guidelines hadn't been updated since 1950, and as we all know, how we are treated medically today is completely different than we were in 1950. So, in any event, like I said, death by a thousand cuts, unless we can really take a different approach, which is to really say, how are we going to accelerate our economic vibrancy here? And if you believe that private sector job growth is what's going to drive that, if you look at states like Florida and Texas and the Carolinas, that's how they have really accelerated their development. By having very low cost of doing business there, quite honestly.
So when you say accelerate the economic vibrancy, it's by addressing those issues you just mentioned.
Absolutely. Okay. And this is my point. I don't know how I joke about this all the time. These advocacy issues are job security for me, because it's not something that's going to get fixed quickly. But I'm hopeful that even with the workers' comp, where we saw some relief, that we have to get real, because we're paying for this. Mm-hmm. We're all paying for this, mm-hmm. and I think government needs to tune in. Unfortunately, I see the tides in Albany maybe going not in the direction of real reform. We see more progressive rules around labor that are costly for employers. Paid family leave, now we're talking about a 12-week bereavement added on to that. I mean, there are things, and I understand if you need that, and if everyone had it and it was a level playing field, that would be one thing. But on a macro level, these things really, when a company is deciding where do they want to expand, and I'm talking about existing companies, mm-hmm. Am I going to put those extra jobs here in Buffalo, or am I going to put them, in Cleveland? Mm-hmm. And it's a math equation for businesses. So, we're kind of doing it to ourselves a little bit.
And as well as I do, the number of people that are are those employers making those decisions, you probably know way more than I do, who are saying, I love it in Buffalo, I want to stay in Buffalo, but I'm not going to grow my business here, I'm going to grow it someplace else. I'll keep what I've got here, but in order for me to be competitive in my industry, I've got to find a place to do what we do that costs less.
Well, I will tell you handful of CEOs that I've talked to about this. It's the CEO who actually wants to do the expansion here in Buffalo, because they have the commitment to the region and all of that. And their teams are looking at them going, but boss, this math doesn't add up. And mm-hmm. at a certain point, loyalty to the region gets outweighed by, common sense business approach. And so what we see are these grandiose incentives around expansion and all that, in some way to try to compensate for what is a really bad environment to do business.
We've got 7 minutes left, and so we're going to go totally positive for the next
seven. Go, please. Thank you.
For the next 7 minutes, because I get weighed down by this. And the first bit of positiveness would be that one of our own local legislators, State Senator Chris Jacobs, is leading this commission on regulatory reform.
Yeah.
And he was on just a few weeks ago, and we had a talk about this. And I know he's frustrated, but at least we've got somebody with a good brain and a lot of personal initiative diving into this, and with other people helping him. So,
yep.
So hopefully that's a little bit of, at least the issues will be more exposed, which is important.
And Chris is great, yeah.
And so anyway, just back to a definition. Somebody writes that by resettled refugees, do you mean illegal immigrants? Let me take a swipe at that. We welcome refugees in this community.
Well, they're not illegal immigrants. It's a different thing.
Well, that's what I mean. We welcome refugees, but illegal immigrants are illegal immigrants.
Right.
That's a different class.
It's
totally
a whole different thing. I mean, to be a certified resettled refugee, the hoops that those folks have to jump through in order to get here are extensive, and they have been vetted.
And they're coming from a real problem.
Oh, absolutely. From countries that are,
And they come here with nothing.
Absolutely nothing. I understand that there's been a lot of confusion around the issue of immigration, and it's really important to understand that, my great grandfather was an immigrant who came here and changed the trajectory of our entire family and worked hard. And we have some folks who have come here from other parts of the world that are really improving our community, and that should be recognized.
And I think that is one of the very positive things in our community. I think this is a very welcoming community to those folks that have had a real tough time someplace else.
I think so.
And I think that, and you mentioned earlier the impact that they have on our working population.
Absolutely. And by the way, paying taxes and fees and helping advance our economy.
And while in many cases they have to accept a handout to get started, they're, I think, also for the most part very anxious to be self-sufficient.
Yeah, and I think, you know, look, I think we need to have a safety net here. Just despite our renaissance, our poverty continues to increase in the city of Buffalo. We are a community that can come together and support people. And I just believe in the good of humanity, and that people want to feel successful, and they want, and I think if they can, if they can have a stable place to live and food on the table, the rest comes.
We do have some callers. Let's take one call from John from Rochester. John, how can we help you? John?
Peter, hey, Daddy.
Hi, John.
I just wanted to comment on the refugee influx in the area. The thing that concerns me is we have people that are coming into New York are very dependent upon the government and subsidies and whatever. And my grandparents, your grandparents, there weren't these kind of subsidies back then. And that's what's killing, especially New York City. I just saw an article today. Medicaid costs are skyrocketing in New York, in part because there's an influx of poor into the system. But I did a quick study on second and third generation immigrants, and I found that the present value of keeping the first generation, when you consider the productivity of the second and third generation, still were far in negative numbers. So I think that's the thing that concerns me about New York. We have an influx. It's not like the Carolinas and Florida. We got an influx of wealth and brain power into those areas. We have the reverse. So,
well, I think that's partially true, or true with some segments. But Dottie, how would you recommend?
Well, I mean, I think first of all, let's talk about I think John, what you might be referring to is some of the information out of New York City potentially, but the experience in Buffalo has not been that. There is an increased expense in terms of social supports in the schools, for example, where you've got a lot of different languages being spoken and all of that. But if you talk to employers that have hired people that have resettled here, we're not getting that kind of negative impact. And in terms of second and third generation, right now I have a woman working in our shop who is a first generation Afghani who came to the U.S. not speaking a word of English, has a college degree, and is now working in economic development in our shop. I don't think we can speak in generalities here. I think unfunded mandates and entitlements, we could do a better job of how those things are managed here in New York State, and we need to do a better job. But I don't think that's a refugee issue.
Let's get down to that positive list here.
Yeah,
you touched on workers' comp. We've made some progress.
Made progress there.
Where else have we made progress?
I think the young people living here is a huge progress. I think if you look around in the tourism sector, there's a lot of really good news there. I want to do a shout out to my former colleagues at Visit Buffalo Niagara, who have managed to get an incredible amount of positive earned media about Buffalo in the travel trades. You know, I just think the word and the narrative about who Buffalo is, and when I talk about Buffalo, I'm really talking about the region.
Yep.
That is a game changer for us, and I cannot say enough about Brian Hayden and Ed Healy and Patrick Kaler, who work at Visit Buffalo Niagara, just relentless in telling our story, and I'm just so proud about that. I think the landscape is changing. I think that now people can invest in their homes because they know they'll get the money back when they sell it. I think if you go downtown, you've got more people. We're not there yet at downtown, but I think about the 500 block, which was like the demilitarized zone, just 3 or 4 short years ago, and is completely different. So I think we believe in ourselves, Peter, and I think that to me is the single biggest difference. And I guess what I'd say to all your listeners is we have to believe, and we have to push and push and push and take what is rightfully ours, which is to reassert ourselves as one of the great cities of the United States, which I believe we are.
And on that note, thank you, Dottie Gallagher, President and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, for joining me this morning and
thank
sharing
you,
your
Peter.
Insights. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for being with us. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.